Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
We have with us today in our studio Joanne Folletta, who is an old friend. We spoke with you, Joanne, some years back, and welcome once again to Crossover.
Thank you, Jill. I'm glad to be here.
We have to trace your rise to fame now because you have been exceedingly successful. What have you been doing?
I was working in Long Beach, California, and I guess when I saw you last, I was guest conducting in Philadelphia, and that's why I connected here. But right now I'm busy with the Buffalo Philharmonic.
Well, that is very busy, I think.
Yeah,
right?
And a lot of concerts, a lot of recordings, and the Virginia Symphony in Norfolk, Virginia.
Yes, for how many years now has that been going?
That's been a long time. I think I'm in my 17th year in Virginia. I can hardly believe it.
And she looks like she's not much older than 17. You look wonderful.
Well, you know, I feel like I almost grew up with the Virginia Symphony because it's been a great learning experience and a wonderful relationship there. And Buffalo, now I'm already in my 9th season, or at the end of my 8th season almost now. It's been very good.
As for a conductor these days, it's quite an effort. I know that you have to have several orchestras really to keep going. It's not, no more are you contracted for very, very, very long periods of time. Is that true? I mean,
actually, I spend a lot of time in Buffalo and in southeastern Virginia. Most of my time is spent between those two cities. But since orchestras do so many different types of concerts, I tend to go back and forth. When we're doing a pops concert in Virginia, I'm usually in Buffalo doing a classical concert, and vice versa. So I have an associate in both cities, and they are very helpful with the youth concerts and the pops, and that leaves most of the classical work for me. So it's been very stimulating because working with two different orchestras has been great.
Buffalo has always had a very good reputation, I remember, from many, many years ago. Good musicians.
It's true.
It's, I guess, a major minor orchestra.
It's true. You know, we've had a very wonderful history of music directors from William Steinberg,
yes,
and Joseph Cripps and Michael Tilson Thomas, mm-hmm, Lucas Foss, I mean, Julius Riddell, wonderful, wonderful conductors. And it has always been an orchestra that's played at a very high level. But, you know, we've had our share of economic problems in the past, partly because of Western New York, difficulty economically,
yes, that area,
in Western New York.
Very,
so
very.
You're right, it's kind of a major minor or minor major symphony, whatever.
Well, I think what's happened really in the symphonic picture is that there used to be just like the five great orchestras or something, but what has happened now is I think that there are many, many very excellent musicians who really can't get into the major orchestras, whoever they may be, because they have a very generic sound, orchestras now. You can't really identify them terribly.
Well,
as they,
and there are just not many openings, really.
There are no openings,
so,
and there are a tremendous number of people that
absolutely
apply for them, because it is very, it's a choice position. I remember when I graduated from Juilliard, at that point, one never really looked for an orchestral job, because in those years, the seasons were quite short,
right,
the pay was not
right,
high,
right,
and you were very limited. Whereas now, of course, it's a plum to have an orchestral
job.
It is.
I mean, because our conservatories are graduating incredibly gifted,
yes,
musicians, and there are very few spaces in orchestras. So, Jill, what's happened, and I think this is what you were thinking, is that the orchestras that are not in the top five have become superb.
Because, exactly,
yeah,
and people love them, and they have, I think, a sense of community, too,
they
as
do
well,
they
and
do
they belong. And so you have a very high level of regional orchestras, and
exactly,
I think the same thing is happening in theater as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not only Broadway, so in a sense, I think it's very good for the country. And
it's very good because, again, as you say, the artistic level is extremely high, but we also are very connected to our community. When we play in the Buffalo Philharmonic, it's really for the Western New York region, for Erie County, for Buffalo, and we're very responsive to our constituency. So it's good.
But you're also doing recordings, is that right?
We are. We've been doing a lot of recordings, some for our own label, but most of them for Naxos. And I'm very proud of that relationship with Naxos because it's an international label. So there are people from China and Japan and, mm-hmm, Russia and who are hearing the Buffalo Philharmonic. We get lots of emails from them. We know that people are listening all over the world. So in a way, it's given us a chance to get Buffalo back into the mainstream of orchestral activity.
Naxos is very, very anxious to cover as much ground as they can. I know we have an enormous selection of recordings by Naxos, but also the internet for you has also proven to be the way to get the word out.
That's right.
Yes,
that's right. And it's been great because Naxos has encouraged us to look for unusual repertoire rather than, you know, the same, I don't know, 10% of the repertoire being recorded over and over. They're very interested in us coming up with some new and unusual things. So
how does your audience respond to contemporary works?
It very well, because we try to mix them in, Jill. You know, I'm not a big fan of the all 21st century music concert, but we try and make it a steady part of who we are, steady part of our repertoire. In Buffalo, they're quite used to it because of Lucas Foss and Michael Tilson Thomas.
Yes.
Well, Lucas especially.
Especially Lucas.
It's true. So I think they've been very open to it, and sometimes it's not necessarily contemporary repertoire. It could be Respighi, for instance. We've done a disco for Respighi, which is lesser-known music by Respighi. So it's
They're
romantic
marvelous,
music.
Yeah. Marvelous works. I remember the Brazilian Impressions. I have an aversion to reptiles. And that there is a one section there, I believe, but they have a snake.
Yeah.
It's
a snake farm.
Farm. Yes.
I guess Respighi and his wife Elsa went on a holiday, and one of the tourist sites they took them to was a snake farm, and he portrays this in music in such an evocative,
oh my goodness,
scary way.
I can't listen to it. I love Respighi. He's one of my favorite composers. Yeah. I thought he was brilliant, and album is also, you have Church Windows, which is another wonderful work, and the Rossiniana. And this is with the Buffalo Philharmonic. Now, you also have a brand new release. We spoke to your concertmaster not too long ago, who was an ex-Philadelphian and Philadelphia Orchestra member. He was assistant concertmaster, I guess, Michael.
I think he was associate concertmaster for 15 years.
Many years. Right. And I had asked him, I think he just wanted to do other things, and he does some conducting as well, doesn't he?
Well, what he's mostly doing is his solo career has really blossomed. I mean, he's playing all over the world as soloist. So being in Buffalo has given him a base, but a lot of time to be able to do that, because he is traveling everywhere. I mean, he's playing in Japan, he's playing in all over the U.S., he's playing in Europe. So he needed that time, and we feel very lucky that he's using Buffalo as his base now. But the recording that I'm really thrilled about, Naxos asked Michael Ludwig to record the Dohnányi Violin Concertos. Now, why these pieces are not known, I will never understand, Jill, because these are two of the most romantic, accessible, virtuosic, singing, just sheerly gorgeous concertos I've ever heard.
Well, I think Dohnányi anyway, I mean, he's not an unsung composer, but he should be played more often. I think there are many of his works that are really fabulous. And Michael did talk to me about the violin concertos.
Yeah, they're amazing. And they've just coming out. We went over to Scotland to record them. They had engaged the Royal Scottish National Orchestra for the recording, and we had a fantastic time. And the result is just stunning. So what I'm hoping is, you know, that Michael has now become an advocate for these concertos, that they will come back into the repertoire, and the people will play them and know about them, because they're fabulous works.
Now, Joanne, here you are. You are on this recording a guest conductor. How does that work? Do you have many guest conductor appearances during the season?
I do. I spend probably a quarter of the year guest conducting, you know, something 15 weeks or so of the year guest conducting. And it's all over. I mean, it can be Japan, it can be Scotland.
So they invite you to come and conduct concert or a series of concerts. Tell the audience a little bit about your background. You have quite an important affiliation with one of the great conductors of all time.
Well, I grew up in New York City, which was wonderful, and I went to the conservatories there, first Manus College of Music, and then Juilliard, our school.
Yeah.
And of course, Leonard Bernstein lived in New York, and he would come to Juilliard periodically to coach us. And it was a fantastic experience working with him. You know, he'd come into the room, our conducting studio, and It was as if the room became electrified. That's the kind of presence he had. He would actually change the atmosphere in the room. And everyone was always excited when he was there. And I remember studying with him. He never talked about technique or specifics of how to use your baton. He always talked about the music, the passion, the drama, what it meant, the intensity behind it. I remember studying Carmen with him, Bizet Carmen, and having him talk about the smell of blood in the bull ring and the sun beating down on you. And you could feel this. I mean, that's the kind of imagination.
Well, you felt that in him, generally speaking. And, of course, he was an enormously talented gentleman. I mean, composer, conductor. And
he was amazing.
He really was. So then what happened? Where did you go after you graduated?
My first job was in Denver with the Denver Chamber Orchestra, and my career's taken me really to places I never would have anticipated. Milwaukee Symphony, Long Beach Symphony, California, the Women's Philharmonic in San Francisco.
They're very, very fine.
Oh, a wonderful place.
And we have a wonderful recording of, I think, some Germaine Taillefer that you conducted on that women's.
That was a great experience for me to discover all this music I didn't know by women. And now I'm concentrating my work with Virginia and Buffalo. But as you said, I do a lot of guest conducting, and it's always a great pleasure for me because, you can imagine when you're guest conducting, you're spending just a week with an orchestra. You don't have to worry so much about ticket sales or personnel issues or development activities.
Just the music.
It's just making music with an orchestra that you become very close to in a week. I just came back from the Denver Symphony where I worked, Colorado Symphony, and Dallas a week before that. And those weeks are very, very inspiring and very stimulating because we have to get a lot done in a week. And we don't know each other very well. So it's an intense experience of getting to know the orchestra, helping provide an environment in which they can make great music.
This must be a rather daunting experience. I mean, you come in there and you step up on the podium. You really don't know these people. And of course, I guess every orchestra is different. The personality of every orchestra is different. And of course, the bigger they are, bigger in the sense of reputation, the more they have their own mindset, I think, in many cases. How do you communicate with these very, very different orchestras? I mean, what do you do?
That's the great joy of it. I mean, you alluded to an earlier conversation about how orchestras have become the same. They actually are not. Every orchestra has really its own personality. But the conductor, the guest conductor, I think has to be very open to that. So I always approach these situations in a way of listening to them, what they're telling me about themselves. So generally the first 15, 20 minutes, even sometimes the first half hour of the rehearsal, we're just making music together. And they're trying to find out who I am, and I'm listening to them and discovering great things about them, what their woodwind section sounds like, how their strings play, how their brass reacts. And you get to know them as a personality, as a character. And then the concert is really about them because they are the people making the music. So as the conductor, you're a catalyst for letting that happen, but I have to leave myself open to who they are. And that's the great delight of guest conducting because it's always different. I mean, the way I might do a Tchaikovsky 4 with a Dallas Symphony was different than I would do with Buffalo.
So you're drawing out the orchestra.
Exactly.
And you're not really telling them what you want.
Well, in a way, I'm subtly influencing how they play. And I come in with a concept of the piece, but it's always in flux. It's always changing because of who they are. So the result is the combined musical experience of the members of the orchestra and the conductor's vision and trying to bring that all together.
And, of course, that is a very open attitude that you have. I think many years ago, the conductor's control was very, very important, and one would identify the orchestra really with the conductor.
Yeah.
Whereas what you're saying is more like an ensemble chamber music kind of attitude where you listen to each other and you kind of make music and it evolves. It's not so much you're conducting them and telling them what to do.
Right. It is, just as you say, it's more like that. I like the idea that we are making music together. Of course, as you can imagine, when you have 100 musicians in front of you, the conductor does make a lot of the decisions and a lot of the shaping comes from the podium simply because it's too large to actually discuss things. But if you're willing as a conductor to listen all the time, to listen to not what people are saying, because there's very little talking going on in rehearsal, but to listen to how they're playing and how they're phrasing, that really does influence the outcome of the concert. And what's wonderful about that is that orchestras do sound different, and they should sound different. I mean, I think that sometimes we've gotten into this thing where orchestras, you know, try and just emulate a kind of neutral sound, and
which is really not,
no,
not, that's certainly not what it used to be.
No, and it's not ideal. I mean, orchestras have personalities because every musician has their own sense of who they are and how they play. So my ideal as a conductor is to be able to create an environment in which that can flourish. And, of course, that's with a lot of control, too, because you've got to sort of get your arms around the ensemble, bring them together, listen to them, and help them have a situation where they can make beautiful music.
I think initially from the, I mean, early times, the there was no conductor. There was, I guess he was called a batteur, the guy that banged, that conducted. He didn't conduct. He just gave the meter or
that's
the rhythm.
Right. You're right. He just banged out beats on the floor. Jean-Baptiste Lully.
Yeah, Lully, exactly. And there was a very bad accident, I think, that occurred with him. I think he hit his toe and
he got gangrene
or something.
And
oh, yeah.
That was the end of
it. Now, again, you are already well into your career, and there have been women conductors before you. But how are you treated as a woman on the podium? Are you treated in any different way?
Things have changed a great deal, mm-hmm. and I think that today it's a very comfortable situation, especially in the United States, when I think there's no real feeling about any difference between women and men. I mean, I think every conductor has to forge a relationship with an orchestra on their own terms. But that has nothing really to do with gender. I found for a long time in Europe it was a little
bit
different.
That's what I was going to ask you. It is different.
It is, and that's changing as well, though. At first in Europe, there was a lot more skepticism, I think. And many times when I conducted in my earlier career in Europe, the orchestras were almost all male.
And also, there were some very unpleasant stories that have come out of Europe about certain orchestras, which we don't name, but would not allow women, or if they had any woman in the orchestra, they were not allowed to vote. They were not considered part of the orchestra, which I think is rather unbelievable.
It is. It is. And, you know, it has changed a lot. I'm sure there are still a few situations like that. But I found that in Europe it is changing. More and more women are now joining the orchestras as, you know, full members.
As members, voting members.
And there seems to be more of an acceptance of a woman as a conductor on the podium. So my experiences have been very good. But very often it was as the first woman conducting in that situation. So there's always a little bit of a question, like, well, is this going to be different? How's this going to work? Is this going to be an odd situation? And
how do you handle them?
You know, I just handle them in the way I would handle any orchestra, expecting the best from them, because I know that as a musician, they want to excel. They want to play well. And in expecting the best, I find I often, very often, get their best. And it doesn't seem to be a factor anymore. You know, I think that they want to make good music. And if they feel that the conductor is enabling them to make good music and always keeping the music as the most important thing, it's all about the music. It's not about the conductor. It's about the piece.
Do you have to tell them that when you get on the podium?
No, I think that they can tell. I think that musicians around the world are very good at assessing what's going on the podium, whether someone is interested in making good music or whether they're interested in something non-musical. So,
Right. So
and that makes a big difference because then they are very cooperative. I often find, too, and this is always amazing to me, how much alike musicians are all over the world.
True.
You know, they could be Chinese, they could be, I don't know, Korean.
And they all complain, of course.
they're all alike. They have similar, they laugh at the same things.
Right.
They, you know, always appreciate getting out a little bit early.
And eating good food.
Eating good food.
Right.
I mean, they don't like the same thing in rehearsal, you know, whether they're in Japan or the U.S. They just grow up somehow alike because of their musical studies and their focus on excellence.
That is a fascinating fact because I think certainly we are getting so many, many, many marvelous musicians from Asia, and they say that it's because of the training there. It's a more disciplined. But I wonder about that. I think that all musicians have gone through very disciplined training. You cannot be a professional without that.
No. And you know, Jill, what I think when I stand in the middle of an orchestra, it's daunting to think about the team that's around you.
Yes, well, that's what I'm saying. You step up there, and for the audience, Joanne, is what how tall are you? About 5'3"?
5'3", yeah.
Yes. And you get up there with your baton, and you've got this large ensemble, basically. Many yep. forces, depending, of course, on the music, and you play large symphonic right. works. This is not a small chamber
no.
orchestra.
But imagine the talent in that group, Jill. When you think about, if you added it up, how many years mm-hmm. each one of those people has been playing their instrument, how many music lessons they've taken, how many hours they've practiced in their life, and all of a sudden, you know, the numbers are getting higher and higher, and it's like, my gosh, this is the greatest team in the world.
Right.
It's the most, the best trained team that could possibly be, and they're always focused from the first time they start playing their instrument on excellence, on getting better. So as a conductor, I mean, that's, it's like a dream team. I mean, how can you imagine being in a greater environment of all of these incredibly talented people who are focused on making something great
happen?
But you
have to control it to some degree.
You control it. You control it. You enable them to be who they are. You bring them together. You get them to sort of buy into your interpretation. You convince them. You have to convince them through the force of your musical understanding of the piece that this is right for now. Let's do it this way. And when that works, it's fantastic.
I think that's a very, very wise thing that you said. I think that if they respect your interpretation and they say, well, wait, this may make a lot of sense right. this way. Let's do it.
Right.
That's very important. And so you actually come to them on a level playing field, literally a level ground. I mean, you're saying, let's talk about this, and this is what I think.
Right.
And
we do that, but you know, the funny thing is, of course, we don't do it in talking.
Of course not. No.
As you know, we just do it through music, and I'm explaining who I am and what I think of the piece to them, and they're very open to it. I find musicians are incredibly open. It may be an interpretation that's different than the one they did 2 years ago, or, you know, the one that they're used
to. Well, that's, I think, what you run into, especially the more, the bigger, again, I'm talking about name-wise, the mm-hmm. orchestra is, the more they are convinced that they're doing it right the same way
right.
all the time, and, you know, they're not going to change it. Do you ever run into that?
No, you know, not so much, because I think musicians are generally open-minded people. And very often, if something is phrased a little bit differently, is paced a little differently, they're intrigued by it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it makes sense to them as a whole, they're absolutely willing to try it. But that's the key. It has to make sense, and they have to be convinced pretty quickly. You know, there are orchestras that tell me that they can assess a guest conductor within the first 10 minutes or so of working.
I'm sure.
As to how much they can trust the person, how much they will enjoy the week working with them. And then, you know, if you can convince them that there's a validity and there's a rightness and there's also an interest in what they're doing to how they're playing, that it can be a marvelous experience.
I would think so. Very much also a growing experience
yeah.
for you and for the orchestra. What about the recording business? So you have a contract with Naxos, is that right?
We do with Buffalo, and Virginia's going to be beginning to record for Naxos next year as well. So we've done a lot of recordings. Again, delving into some unusual repertoire, Charles Tomlinson Griffiths, and his lesser-known works by Respighi. I've done some things with London Symphony for Naxos, and again, this new Dohnányi that I'm especially proud of with Michael Ludwig, who is a Philadelphian, so I know that people know his name, but this particular disc is really stunning.
Well, it's been wonderful speaking with you, Joanne, and I just have to keep up with your exciting life and your progress, and it's delightful to receive these wonderful recordings, and I wish you the best.
Well, thank you so
Come
much,
Come and visit
Jill.
Us again.
Thank you.